Hi, kids. Welcome to Bronco Land. We got some smart ones in the room.
Hello, Broncos country. Welcome back to the DenverBroncos.com podcast. Ben and Mace here on a nice September day, new month, new us. Not really, it's the same us, but we're getting ready to finish off this preseason.
Hopefully it goes well this month and we're not sitting there in a press box saying, wake me up when September ends.
Oh, that one never gets old, huh?
After 11 years, still going strong.
Well, we've got one game left, and I think at the time this podcast will be posted on Thursday, it'll be tonight. So we're recording this on Wednesday afternoon, so forgive us if anything's dated. However, we have some news to cover. We'll start with the roster cuts that finished up on Tuesday. There were, I guess, 15 total that came in. One trade, one move to IR. The rest were waivings or releases.
Not really any great surprises among the moves, quite frankly.
No.
You know, Chris Clark, the trade of him to Houston, maybe a mild surprise, but...
Yeah, I thought it was a little surprising, but not too much.
Not too much, and the thing to consider is the Broncos are almost certainly only keeping eight offensive linemen on the final 53-man roster, and then probably a couple of guys on the practice squad, so you can make sure you go too deep so you can get through a practice during the regular season. And you had Chris Clark and Michael Schofield, and I think Schofield's played the best games of his career to date in the last 2 weeks. I think Schofield has shown enough to where they have confidence in him to be the swing tackle and the swing backup tackle, can work on the left side, can work on the right side. You know, they moved him back and forth over the course of the summer between OTAs and training camp. Clearly they like his progress, and that's the kind of growth that you wanted to see from Schofield, to the point where we may even be talking about Michael Schofield next year pushing for a starting job if he doesn't make any starts at some point this year. So that factored into it. The Broncos get back a draft pick next year for Chris Clark. And then, of course, what was interesting, if you watched Hard Knocks on Tuesday night, mm-hmm. they actually aired the conversations between Texans general manager Rick Smith and John Elway here with the Broncos. And among the items in those conversations were that the Broncos, you know, may be looking to trade one of their inside linebackers. That shouldn't surprise anybody. Everyone at this time of year is talking about trades, and every team wants to trade from where they have a surplus.
Right.
I mean, and you look at inside linebacker.
You're going to cut a guy anyway.
Right. So why not try to get something back for him? The Broncos already cut Reggie Walker, who has, you know, as we record this, has not yet been picked up, but has some value. And I have to think, once you get past week one, because he's a vested veteran, I think he might sit out there on the market for a couple weeks. But once you get past week one, would not surprise me if a team brings him in.
No.
A good special team or good backup, I think he would make a lot of teams' rosters, and he's cut at the trimming of the roster to 75. There are going to be some talented players that are going to play in this league that get cut by the Broncos, and you look at some of their deepest positions: inside linebacker, running back, and wide receiver. You know, I think those players on the back end of the depth chart that are on the bubble, these are clearly guys, they're not just auditioning for the Broncos when they play Thursday night against the Cardinals. They're auditioning for the entire league.
I guess the biggest moves of those first initial transactions had to be Zach Dysart.
It's been a tough summer for him. It's been a tough go. A new scheme. Didn't really look all that comfortable in it. Made some plays from time to time. Other times struggled. I mean, you could see it if you watched the preseason game in Seattle. Really couldn't get into a rhythm. Was under some pressure. Had some bad throws. The fact that he was claimed by the Chicago Bears off waivers, so they put in a claim immediately to get him, that says a lot about what his potential is in the league. And being back with Adam Gase and John Fox, hopefully that'll help him get back on track. He knows their language, their nomenclature. I think he may end up sticking on the 53-man roster there. And if he can, great for him. Good guy. I mean, I think we all wish him all the best.
Oh, for sure.
But the Broncos were probably only going to keep three quarterbacks between the 53-man roster and the practice squad. And Trevor Siemian, 2 years younger, looked like he was better for what the Broncos were doing now than Zach Dysart. It seemed pretty clear in practices, definitely clear in the games. Now the big question for Siemian is, has he done so well that the Broncos cannot put him on waivers to try to get into the practice squad? Are they locked into having to keep him on the 53 rather than take that risk? That could be a big question the Broncos have to answer here in the next 72 hours from this point before they make that decision. For what it's worth, in Gary Kubiak's last 5 years in Houston, he did carry three quarterbacks coming out of the preseason. So would not surprise me if Siemian's on the 53.
And I guess the other big move maybe didn't make waves outside of Denver, but Jodon Duncan, he was an intriguing player as a fullback, but I think as you've noted and others have noted before that fullbacks often see their best play as they get older and they get a better understanding. And unfortunately, he's just not quite there yet as much as a guy like James Casey is, who has a lot of experience understanding that role in this offense, being able to visualize how things are going to formulate in the offense and where you need to go. So unfortunate for Jodon, but at some point I think this will he'll get it, he'll understand it, and he'll move on to a new place and hopefully pick up things.
I'm actually a little bit surprised that he passed through waivers unclaimed, simply because he showed this summer that he can stay healthy, and that was a big thing. A lot of teams have medical red flags on him dating back to the foot injury he had at Dixie State that kept him from playing in the Senior Bowl. He was on a lot of teams' radars, a lot of scouts' radars when he was a senior at Dixie State. Again, he got the Senior Bowl invite. He got the Shrine Game invite. He took the Senior Bowl because, you know, let's face it, that's the more prestigious of the two games. And if he had not been injured late in 2013, he fit the template of that guy from D2, D3, who goes down to Mobile, has a good week, and shoots up the draft charts. We saw that this year with Ali Marpet out of Hobart going down to Mobile, tearing it up, and becoming a second-round pick of the Buccaneers. So I thought teams might look back at their scouting reports and someone would make a claim. That hasn't happened. It'll be interesting to see what transpires with Jodon Duncan going forward, because he's a classic practice squad type guy as far as someone that you want to get on the field every day and develop. In fact, it kind of harkens back to when the practice squad was actually called the developmental squad in the late 80s and early 1990s. Because that really was its function, to develop players for the future, to get them on the practice field every day, to get them to learn, see what they could do. Jodon Duncan, I think, needs that time and that kind of patience. However, on the other hand, I could see a situation where he ends up not being on somebody's practice squad this year, kind of similar to Chase Vaughn, another guy who got released this week, or waived this week, pardon me. I could see, if Jodon Duncan doesn't sign with anybody over the course of this year, I could see him right back here next offseason as a reserve future signee in January. He ends up coming back and competing for a job, and the Broncos finding out what he can do in his second camp, because there was some potential there. I think there still is. I don't think the book is closed on Jodon Duncan. We'll see what happens, but it would be kind of cool if at some point he was back here.
Interesting. You talked about the kind of like the developmental squad. And that reminded me of Corbin Olauk's experience in this developmental league.
The Fall Experimental Football League, which, even though it's experimental, begins with an E, the acronym is FXFL.
Well, X also stands for very exciting letter. So that's why everyone tries to use XFL.
It should be the FEFL.
Yeah, but X's are rad. They mean extreme.
What is this, 1997?
I suppose so.
2001 with the XFL, which they would say the X stood for nothing. Just it was
It's just
it didn't stand for extreme without the vowel at the beginning of the word. It was just X.
The letter X is just naturally exciting in itself. There has been the letter X has somehow taken on the for being used consistently without an E in the 90s, mm-hmm. or I guess in the late 80s.
You just come to
understand X to be a very exciting letter, no matter what it's representing.
One of the proposed nicknames when the Quebec Nordiques moved to Denver before they became the Colorado Avalanche, one of the proposed nicknames was going to be the Rocky Mountain Extreme, but not...
That's
not
awful.
Not letter X-treme, but it was actually going to be spelled correctly.
It doesn't matter. It's awful. Thank goodness they went with Avalanche. That's a much better.
What do you
name.
Have as your mascot for the extreme? A snowboarder?
Yeah, I guess so. A snowboarder, or skateboarder.
Poochie the Rockin' Dog from The Simpsons.
Yeah, well, it's proactive. It's
totally unique paradigm.
Yeah, exactly. He
gets bizay thoroughly. I think that's where proactively.
Yes. The FXFL, by the way, has four teams. I'm not sure how many teams you need to have to go from just like how what it is considered a league. Two teams? Three teams?
I think I'd have to say four. A league would be you have enough for a league when you can have multiple games in a week, multiple or in a cycle, like.
So this is funny. The FXFL has four teams. One's in Brooklyn, mm-hmm. one's in Ohio, one's in Wappinger Falls, New York, and then one's in Florida. Makes no sense. Why would
did the Florida team even play any games in Florida either? I'm not sure.
Why would they?
Yeah.
So I'm on their website, and the Florida Black Tips, that's the name, and it's like a
I think they actually abandoned Florida, and then they just wore the Black Tips for a while. They didn't have
You be located in Florida when you could just move up to the Northeast and not have to travel?
Yeah, and it's a very poor website because you know the Broncos have had some. In addition, Corbin Laux is not the only FXFL player that has passed through here in recent months. And trying to find stats on these young men is exceedingly difficult. I've had better luck trying to find high school stats for some of these guys from 10 years ago than last year's stats in the supposedly professional FXFL.
So the Florida Black Tips website literally is just text that says, Florida Black Tips team page coming soon, and below that is a video of a news report with a shark in the waters around New York. That's it. It's quite detailed.
This seems to be a couple of steps below the United Football League of a few years ago.
It's, as we said, it's as close as you can get to not being a league, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Which I don't understand why minor league football never really took off.
One that came closest, at least as far as 100-yard football goes, I mean, you have the Arena Football League, which is...
Mm-hmm.
kind of survived over the years, but is...
Go Charlotte, What were they?
Rage.
The Rage.
And then the Carolina Cobras moved
Cobras. That's what
from
I was
Raleigh to Charlotte. But the Charlotte Rage was in the mid-1990s.
My brother used to work concessions during Cobras games sometimes.
They were over at the second Coliseum, right?
Mm-hmm.
The one that's... Yeah, the first Charlotte Coliseum is still there. Now it's the Bojangles Coliseum.
Right.
Second one is now just... a vacant lot.
Now there is a corporate nickname that I will support 100%.
They have to have the best concessions,
hands down,
in any southern arena, you would think. And the Checkers are moving there.
Moving back.
They're moving. Yeah, moving back to Bojangles Coliseum from Time Warner Cable, from the cable box.
Hmm. That's weird. They haven't really have they. How
they're
much
renovating
they update it.
It? Okay. They're actually and so. You know how the seats in Bojangles Coliseum, they're pretty close to the original seats from the 1950s. They're
right.
still
that place has not been
polished
completely
them and
updated.
Refurbished them, but they're basically these wood seats. But I think they're redoing the seats. I think they're putting in new jumbotrons, new signage, and all that, bringing a 1950s silver domed. I wouldn't call it a relic. I would call it an antique. A relic means it has no value. An antique implies that it's got some value. And that, I would say that of the Bojangles Coliseum. And now, and bringing it into the 21st century will be the home of minor league hockey.
It's not a bad-looking stadium. I mean, it's definitely kind of older style.
Yes.
But...
And the neighborhood...
Not awful.
The neighborhood's kind of been up and down over the years.
Yeah,
off of Independence Boulevard.
Yeah. But, I mean...
I went there when they had the Southern... They had the first couple of rounds of the Southern Conference basketball tournament there back in 2010. And I went over there for a game, for a couple of games. But...
I appreciate that they're not just trying to build a new arena.
Yeah. Well, it's got good bones.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what bothers me about cities and towns, cities and states that preemptively tear down buildings. Like Atlanta, Turner Field. Are you kidding me? And I love the Braves, mm-hmm. as many of the listeners know. But I'm aghast, mortified at the notion of leaving a stadium after 20 seasons that, frankly, is just fine. Good bones, good structure, nothing wrong with it. Falcons are leaving the Georgia Dome after what will be 26 seasons going into their new nest. There's absolutely nothing wrong with the Georgia Dome as a facility for the general fan. Nothing at all.
I mean, it's crazy. So while Charlotte is holding on to, I keep wanting to call it, was it Cricket Arena or something?
Well, it was the Charlotte Coliseum. See, I'm old enough to remember when it was the Charlotte Coliseum. And then it was Independence Arena,
yeah,
because it was on Independence Boulevard. And then it was, wasn't it something else as well in addition to being Cricket Arena? Cricket Wireless, when you want a cell phone that works about 20% of the time.
So, no, that's it. Charlotte Coliseum, Independence, Cricket Arena. And Bojangles, obviously.
Yes. If you're ever in the South, you need to go to Bojangles, people.
And opened in 1955.
Yeah, it's a classic.
They are also trying to hold on to Memorial Stadium.
Memorial Stadium in Charlotte. Okay, yes.
Built in 1934.
Mm-hmm. Is located adjacent to the campus of Central Piedmont Community College. Home of many big high school football games.
Mm-hmm.
Currently the home of the Charlotte Hounds,
mm-hmm.
and the Charlotte Independents, a third tier soccer team. And back in the 1970s, the home of the Charlotte Stars, later the Hornets, of the World Football League.
Hmm.
The thing about this stadium, it's okay, again, it's old, it's no frills, but as I like to say,
people like it.
It's got good bones. If Charlotte ever bid for a Major League Soccer franchise, it would be the perfect spot. It's in the heart of the city. It's right near downtown. You'd have to do some renovations. You'd, you know, spruce it up, build some suites, whatever. But it's an ideal spot. I have an affinity for what I think at one point it was called American Legion Memorial Stadium.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it may still be.
I think it still is.
Yeah.
But I think they were trying to. There was damage at some point during a storm a few years ago. I think so. There are
how much damage there could be. The place is just concrete and metal bleachers.
So I think they.
I mean, there is no. There, when I say no frills, I mean no frill. This stadium, you plop down on the bleacher, you sit down for 2 hours, and then you get up and go home.
The weirdest thing was, so when I first went there, is that you have to buy coins to buy food.
Yes.
You can't just use money, because what like fun
being,
is that?
It's like being at a state fair.
Yeah, or Disney World.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess you don't need the money, but it's fun.
There are some things at Turner Field in Atlanta that operate that way, too.
It's bizarre.
Must be a peculiar Southern thing. I've never really thought about that, because being from the South, I just consider this sort of thing normal.
For us, yeah. It was an out-of-water experience for me, but anyway, getting back to Broncos.
Thank you for indulging us as the two of us jointly hijack this conversation to Charlotte, North Carolina, as we always do.
I wanted to talk about, I guess, this fourth preseason game that'll be Thursday night against the Cardinals, and I was trying to figure out how much it really means, which for a young player. It means maybe a matter of staying on a team or not. Mm. But how
last
much
10 spots much, on the roster, I'd say.
How much does it correlate to what maybe a player shows?
It breaks ties.
Mm-hmm.
And when you get deep on the roster, you really are talking about separating shades of gray. So someone has a big game in the preseason finale. If it's close, maybe that pushes that player over the edge and gets him on the 53-man roster. That being said, they're going to look at it in the context of the big picture. But as Gary Kubiak noted, he talked about the receivers, said it's going to be a big game for them, especially on special teams, that he may end up keep. He even said he would may keep six or seven receivers on the final roster and that special teams would have an impact. Jordan Taylor's going to play extensively on special teams, it looks like. Corbin Laux may get punt return work in addition to kickoffs. If Benny Fowler's healthy, he had a little bit of a hip issue, mm-hmm. he's going to play on special teams. I mean, it's not going to be the entire body of work, obviously, for these guys, but a big play. And it may not be what all of us regard as a big play. It might be just simply getting your butt downfield on punt coverage. And maybe you don't make the tackle, but you just get down there faster than everybody else. And it's something that kind of goes unseen to just people just following the ball. That's where this is going to be decided. Then there's some other spots. I mean, I talk about receiver, but inside linebacker, like I mentioned, I think this game is going to be crucial in determining those spots. Offensive line, because the first team, obviously it's not going to play, but it looks like Max Garcia is going to be working at center. He was working at center during practice this week. He's auditioning to be the swing backup on the interior. If he gets that, what does that mean for veterans like Gino Gradkowski, mm-hmm. Shelly Smith? What's their role going to be? That's where the intrigue in this game is. And again, I think it is going to be a little bit tiebreaker. And also something interesting to watch, if Garcia works at center, then I think you'll see Gino Gradkowski work at guard. So they may be competing with each other to see maybe not who makes the 53. They could both make the 53, but who gets a jersey and who ends up inactive on game days.
That's what I thought was interesting with Gino is that until recently, I don't think I had seen him work at guard too much.
I think there's some a little bit of guard work in Baltimore in practice, but basically he's been a center his entire career for the most part.
And looking back on last year's preseason finale, the guy who really stood out was Shaq Barrett, mm-hmm. who had a couple sacks against the Cowboys, and now he's been showing a lot of that, what he showed last year. And he's really been building himself up into, I think, a guy who, you know, we've talked about Shane Ray and how he's been working both spots, but maybe Shaq Barrett's become good enough to kind of be the depth guy back there with him.
Well, with the groin issues for Laurente McCray, and he saw a little bit of practice time this week, but then on Monday, but then was back on the sideline on Tuesday. I think you have to keep Shaq Barrett on the 53. For that reason alone, you need two backups at the outside linebacker spots. But again, like you mentioned last year, he had the big preseason finale. He's actually, if you go by Pro Football Focus's rankings, I believe he's the highest rated defensive player on the Bronco roster.
I haven't checked that.
Don't
but
quote
would not
me on that.
Me.
I'm going from memory because I was looking it up a couple of days ago to see, how high Darius Kilgo ranked.
Very highly.
And other interesting thing from the Pro Football Focus rankings, Ben, is that Shane Ray has the highest rating of any first round pick.
That was interesting. I did see that.
That's interesting.
This morning from mm-hmm. Pro Football Focus. I didn't really expect that, I guess, but I hadn't been paying too much attention to other first round picks. So
I knew Ray was doing well in the games. I will say this for him. I think he is playing better than he is practicing.
Mm-hmm.
I think sometimes in practice he struggled a bit as he was really kind of trying to get up to speed. That being said, I refer to practice struggles. I'm talking about earlier in camp. I think he's practiced better the last couple of weeks. Again, missed all the time during OTAs and minicamp because of the toe problem. Had to get back up to speed. But he and Shaq Barrett work very well together. I mean, to the point where if I've got Ware, Von Miller, Shaq Barrett, and Shane Ray all up on the 46-man roster on game days. Even though you do lose something when you have when you don't have Miller and Ware out there together, and you could see that in the game last week in San Francisco because Colin Kaepernick had his big runs when you had Ray and Barrett as the outside linebackers and there was a little bit of over-pursuit and getting caught out of position. But you also see that they can consistently penetrate the pocket. You see that they can make that they can be disruptive in the pass rush. And maybe for a possession every now and again, you give Von Miller and DeMarcus Ware rest together, and you put Barrett and Ray together out there and see what they can do.
The other thing is, if you let Barrett go, there's not much chance he's going to be able to come back to the practice squad. It's one thing when he's a rookie, like last year, out of CSU. No offense to any CSU fans.
There's a lot of film out there on him now. There'll be two preseasons worth of film, and he's had some dominant play. And frankly, the Pro Football Focus ranking, it doesn't help your chances of getting of sneaking him onto the practice squad. Teams are going to look at metrics like that, especially if you're at the bottom of the league, and you have a thin roster on the back end. You're gonna look at metrics like that. You're gonna look at numbers and say, oh, well, he might be better than the guy we have. Let's just give him a shot and see what he can do. Let's make that waiver claim. You know, don't be surprised if, say, Tennessee and Tampa Bay each make 5 waiver claims coming the day after the deadline. Their rosters are so thin in some spots. Mm-hmm. And wouldn't surprise me if among their claims are Broncos, because this is at a lot of positions, this is a very deep roster. I would say it's the deepest roster I've seen around here. And I've been here for most of the last 13 years. I think this is the deepest roster the Broncos have had.
And you were right about Shaq Barrett. He was the top player on the Broncos in the preseason based on PFF ratings. Also, the number 2 outside linebacker in a 3-4 at right behind Khalil Mack. Mack rated at 15.5.
You're not going to slip a guy like that through waivers to the practice squad.
You know, I hadn't
not happening.
I hadn't looked at this, our cumulative PFF ratings for each player.
Mm-hmm.
The top player on offense is Ben Garland.
Yeah, interesting.
Number 2, Max Garcia, and then Chris Clark.
Garcia's significant get considering that he's going up against first teamers.
Yes.
And again, to come back to the point we talked about last week when after the Broncos signed Evan Mathis, it's not a reflection on Max Garcia. They just wanted a little more experience. But Max Garcia, barring anything unforeseen, is eventually going to start for this team and may well become a long-term starter.
Yeah.
I feel pretty confident in saying that Max Garcia is probably going to start for this team next year somewhere.
Interesting.
And if someone gets hurt on the interior, if he does well Thursday night, he could be the first guy in and start this year. That's the thing, that the odds of keeping the offensive line quintet together for 16 games, not great. Injuries happen, attrition happens. So I think if Garcia is the swing guy on the interior and if Schofield is a swing guy on the outside, chance of them starting this year at some point, pretty good.
Yeah. I don't see how anyone could take the Mathis signing as something bad against Garcia with how much he's done as a rookie.
You just had to go for the position where the biggest upgrade was available.
I mean, he's an all-pro. He's a 2-time Pro Bowler. This has nothing to do. This could be like a pretty good veteran that he would be taking over for. And
didn't come with the injury risk that Jake Long did. I actually did a radio spot in Detroit this morning on ESPN Radio in Detroit. And they got a question off Twitter asking about Jake Long, if the Broncos would go after him. And I said I didn't think they would.
Yeah.
They basically made their big splash on the offensive line, bringing in Evan Mathis. They thought he provided the better upgrade. If you had to try to bolster one spot, what was it going to be? Where were you going to get the biggest boost? And it's at guard. And, you know, it's not the greatest thing for Garcia individually. I know he was hoping to start, but seems like he's handled it very well, and he's mature, and he's a pro, and I think he's wise beyond his years, and I think he'll be okay.
So one last thing is looking at the roster and how it's constructed right now. I'll go over this real quickly. We've got three quarterbacks. We've kind of talked about how Kubiak's been and known to keep three quarterbacks, and that might not mean anything this year, but in the past, that's his MO.
Yeah.
We have five running backs after the waiving of Jeremy Stewart, 10 receivers, 6 tight ends, 13 offensive linemen, 10 defensive linemen, 14 linebackers, 14 secondary, and then 3 specialists, just as they said they'd like to keep.
Mm-hmm.
So where, when you're going to do 22 moves coming up after this fourth game, what positions do you think take the most attrition?
Well, offensive line, you're going to get down to probably 8 on the 53.
So that's 5 players.
Yeah.
Probably don't need 6 tight ends.
Yeah, you won't have.
But
that.
One of those is a fullback.
Right.
So
that will be interesting to watch to see if they keep a.
Oh wait, 5 tight ends. This is an old roster.
Yeah.
So
because they've got 4 tight ends and 1 tight end fullback.
Yeah. Yeah. Dan White. Sadly,
Dan White's gone.
Has been cut.
And
that would be 9 wide receivers at this point with Nathan Palmer's waving.
Wide receiver, I thought they might try to get down to 4 or 5, but with Kubiak's comment on Tuesday that they might keep 6 or 7, I thought that was interesting. And one of those spots may well come from tight end. And something to consider as well, we've seen this on the practice field during training camp. When the Broncos went into goal line packages, they used Cody Latimer as kind of a hybrid tight end receiver because he's a very good blocker, and he's willing to get physical.
This brings up, so I was just talking to Tyke Tolbert the other day, and one of the things in my research about him, I had found that Eric Decker had said that Tyke's coaching was unique in how much he focuses on technique. That's a little bit of a rhyme. And I asked Tyke, what was so unusual about how he coaches versus, you know, how he coaches in the NFL? Why is this so rare? And he was saying that as a wide receivers coach, he tells his guys that, okay, out of 65 plays, you might get the ball 5 times. What are you doing on the other 60? You have to block, whether that's for another wide receiver, another running back. And then he said that on every play, he tells his guys, you're the primary target, and you're the primary blocker.
It's interesting you talk about that, because if you go on the website, we have our weekly film review, the BMW Ultimate Performance, and I focus on slot receivers, and I focused on Jordan Norwood, because he had a lot of reps in the slot on Saturday. And one play I zeroed in on was on C.J. Anderson's 14-yard run, and it wasn't that he had an exceptionally important block because the play is going away from him, but he probably maybe let go of the block on Keith Reeser a little bit too soon, but it was the way he attacked Reeser off the line of scrimmage. He just quickly he wasted, you know, there was no hesitation. He just quickly got his arms up, got in position. That kind of aggressiveness and willingness to block off the snap like that—it's how you make a team.
Tyke said, you are much more likely to hear praise from him for a good block than for a touchdown.
You know, the guy who would appreciate that would be Rod Smith. Rod used to just harp on the younger receivers on, you know, blocking, blocking, blocking. I actually remember, and this is just kind of testament to Rod Smith's ethos. I remember in 2006, he's blocking for Mike Bell. And Mike Bell has a big run up the right sideline in a preseason game. And Mike Bell runs out of bounds. Well, Rod's blocking for Mike Bell. And if Rod's blocking for you, you don't run out of bounds. You get all the yardage you can.
I couldn't help but go back and, you know, the first thing I thought to mind when I heard Tyke say that was, well, you know, you go back to CJ's run. Not a run play per se, catch and run against Oakland, a 51-yarder. Who do you see at the end of that play but Demaryius Thomas? So, yeah.
But then the flip side of that, in the playoff game when CJ was, you know, made that fourth down run happen on his own, could have been a touchdown, but that was actually a failure of the receivers to stay with their blocks. And in the end, the Broncos settled for a field goal. So it works both ways. That is what that is now. I mean, it was it's painful to look back on. But it is a teachable moment.
I was looking back on that game today.
I have the feeling the moment that will never happen again with the Broncos wide receivers when C.J. Anderson is doubling back trying to make something happen on his own. You know, if the Broncos had come back to win that game, Swanee, that would have been one of the most legendary runs in team history.
Yeah. That was incredible. How many missed tackles did he force on that play? Like,
I believe four.
Yeah. On a short yardage kind of deal. That was a stunning play. And I was looking back on, I was going through our photo archives of that game because I was looking for photos of C.J. Anderson for upcoming game day cover story. And and I went through that game because, I mean, his late season run did not stop at the end of the regular season. He had a pretty good game in that playoff game.
Even though he'll tell you he didn't think he did.
Yes, he said that.
And we actually wrote about that on our site earlier in the off season when he talked about it. Because I'm thinking to myself, dude, you busted your butt like no one else did out there. You know, and you think you didn't do enough, but that's just the mindset he has. He's driven by something deeper.
Yeah,
it's cool to watch, and I really hope for his sake he has a big year. It'll help the team as well, but I think he deserves the spoils. I think he's earned it.
Oh,
with,
for sure.
With plays like that, and you know, and I think,
plus he's a really good guy. Yeah. I don't know if he runs
on the field like someone's trying to take his job.
Yeah, people are.
Yeah, look at what Ronnie Hillman's done this preseason. And Juwan, look at what he did in short yardage last Saturday.
Juwan's another great guy. I don't know if you saw the story about how that was like his grandmother's birthday. His grandmother passed a couple years ago.
Yeah.
So, a bunch of good guys back there.
It's a good room, running back room.
I think that'll probably do it for the podcast. I was gonna see if we wanted to touch on Peyton Manning's. His KOA interview when he talked about Trevor Siemian's email address. I thought it was pretty funny.
That and the haircut. Peyton Manning explaining.
Spared him.
Why the rookies don't have the rookie haircuts, the rookie quarterbacks. Great point. I thought he's right. Osweiler never got the cut. Zach Dysart, when he was a rookie, never got it. And Trevor Siemian, actually, that when we were going down to Houston, the first thing I noticed when the players were getting on the plane, I turned to Austin Brink, one of our video guys, who was sitting next to me. I said, "Trevor didn't get the haircut."
Well, as Manning says, he's already got a bad haircut.
That's true. Now, my hair is going into Trevor Siemian territory. Well, no, it's just I think, frankly, when I last talked to him, I think he and I are in the same boat. We just have to get a cut. Mm. It's not that we have a bad haircut to begin with. It's just it's gotten a little bit long. It's starting to die. It's not cut to where it's supposed to start diving over the ears, but it is. That's making it a very 80s dated haircut. It's time to go get a trim. I promise you.
He said it was a, quote, borderline mullet. Yours is not borderline
mullet. Not a borderline mullet, but there is a driver's license where the shadow hit just right.
Right, sure.
And I had
shadow.
My collar up.
And it looks
it's
like
a mullet. Well, hey, I lived in Florida.
Sure, mullet, it just looks like
Florida, where the mullet is king.
So he just wants the quarterbacks to look sharp, and he said Trevor Siemian has got to get rid of his Northwestern email.
Now he makes a good point on that one. It's time to leave the college toys behind. But then again,
you got to go with the Gmail because you can't do it. No offense to AOL, but no one really has. No offense, Mace. I know you had an AOL.
It just tells you how long I've been on the internet. But
right, I still have my Yahoo.
I have a Gmail as well.
Yeah,
I have a Gmail.
Gmail is the modern one, and in a few years we'll be like, who uses Gmail anymore?
Yes, and then you'll be an antique.
Yeah.
Like I am.
Well, I still have my Yahoo, but it just kind of sits there now because I don't remember the password, and so I can't get anything, and so it's not even an option at this point.
I occasionally dive back into my Yahoo email. I rarely use it, but
all I get is spam.
Yeah, but I started going back in there, and there are relics of my dating years. Like, when you know, if you were, you know, meeting, if you were using the online method to, you know, try to meet some girls that you wouldn't otherwise meet. And there's like these back and forth, these emails that as I wrote, because this is like, you know, pre Tinder and everything.
Love letters at this point.
That's the old state, right? What
once would have been love letters sent, maybe. Maybe not if it's like online dating.
I wouldn't call them love letters. I'd call them yang and know you letters, and then and then you get to the point where the phone numbers are exchanged, and then the emails stop.
Yeah, there you go. Phones always better.
The phones, and then there were dates, and everything kind of petered out in the end. But it was just,
and it all started on Yahoo Mail.
Yeah, it was interesting to look back at some of those on there. Like, wow, interesting. Just diving into my past.
But let this be a lesson to all you fresh out of college grads.
Dump your university email.
They're going to go away anyway.
Yeah, they're going to take it away. Yeah. I remember when it took a few months, but Mizzou took away my email, and then USF took away my email. And I wish I had those. I wish I'd saved some emails from that because, again, that would have been interesting to look back on. Messages back and forth with, past lady friends.
Star-crossed.
I've got a heck of a history there.
Yeah, and
we'll save that for another podcast.
Yeah, Thanks for joining us. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes, and we'll catch you on a week's time as we get ready for the regular season opener. Very exciting. See you all in a week.